Hey, it's Bethany here with Dialed In. I'm so happy that you're listening today. Before we hop into this episode, I wanted to let you know about a new resource for this new decade. It is the Action Takers Resource Guide. So I know from experience that it can be so hard to know where to start. When you're thinking about making a change in your life, you know it's going to be uncomfortable and you know that it's going to take some time and dedication. And sometimes there's just so much information out there that it's hard to narrow down and choose a focus. So I've done that for you. In this resource guide, there's a complete list of all different kinds of things and ways for you to start. So here's how I want you to use this. Go to my website, bethanyclem.com. Simply enter your name and email. You get an immediate download of this resource. You can print it out. You can have it on your computer, but it takes you through all different steps to get to know yourself better. There's a list of podcasts that you can get plugged into. There are a huge amount of books here that you can start reading to help change your life. And there's even tools that can help you stay organized, among other things. Now, just pick one area. Just simply pick one area that appeals to you that you think, you know what, I could work this in to my daily routine, or I could work this into my routine 2 or 3 days a week. Pick one, get started. I'd love to hear how it goes. Let me know how you're doing. Let me know how you like the resource. And I can't wait to see how this year is amazing for you. All right, we'll get to the episode. Until next time, take action, live big, and enjoy Dialed In. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dialed In. I'm your host, Bethany Clemenson, and today we're talking with Amber Furman. Amber is a lawyer by day and beyond a corporate podcaster at night, among other things. We're going to get to know a little bit about her story. Before we came on today, I was telling her that there's like 25 stories at least that we could share today about her amazing history, her brave choices, and really just going after her dreams. But we're going to see where it takes us. Amber's going to share a little bit about what it means to live big, according to her, and what that journey has looked like. So welcome to the show, Amber.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
My pleasure. I cannot wait to dive in. So I'm just going to start off by asking you, so tell us, lawyer by day, what's going on with you, and how'd you get to become a lawyer, and what made you decide to do maybe things a little bit differently, and what does living big mean to you? That's a lot of questions. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. So I'll give the Cliff Notes version, because I feel like how I became a lawyer is like 6 or 7 stories in and of itself. But I grew up in a super, super small town, and I always knew that education was important to me. And I look back and I can't really see a time in my life as a kid where I said, okay, I'm gonna be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Education was always at the top of my list. And so I was that nerd that everybody in high school hates that's doing like book reports on John Grisham books in like 6th grade, and everybody's like trying to read like picture books, and I'm reading like 400 page books, and just I was nobody's friend. I remember vividly like teachers saying to me like, why are you doing these book reports on these huge books? But that's what I enjoyed reading, loved reading as a kid. And so you would have thought that it would be natural for me to take that into the legal field, but I was so adamant I was not going to law school. And I remember my dad, when I was graduating from school, going, I don't know what I want to do, but I know I want to go to school. Mm-hmm. And he would say, you know, you should think about law school. And I remember saying to him, Dad, I'm not going to law school. Like, I like people, and people don't like attorneys, and I want friends, and I'm not doing it. So I actually started my computer programming degree at Idaho State University, and I won't get too far into it, but my first year of college, my dad passed away, and that kind of sent me in this spiral of not really knowing what direction I was supposed to go. Like, I'm in this point in time where people are supposed to be learning about who they are as an adult and figuring out what their future holds, and my life had just been completely torn to pieces. So I spent a whole bunch of years spiraling and moving my feet and not really making any progress. But when you're in that moment, you can't tell that you're not going anywhere. So it felt like I was making progress, and I wasn't. So fast forward about 6 years, while I'm still in undergrad and still don't have a degree, and I'm not any closer than I was when I started, I was like, something has to give. So I ended up taking a constitutional law class with a friend of mine who was in paralegal studies, and I didn't hate it. And I was like, okay, I've got to figure out something to do. This kind of meshes with me. Maybe law school is the way I want to go. So I decided that law school was going to be the process. And so I started studying for the LSATs, turned my grades around in undergrad, really focused on finally graduating. Took me 9 years to get a 4-year degree in undergrad. Did well on the LSATs, got a partial scholarship to law school, and then never looked back. So I moved to Michigan, went to law school over there, graduated at the top 3% of my class, came back to the West Coast, to Nevada, with the thoughts of doing criminal defense, interned at the public defender's office here in Clark County, passed the bar, and then ended up in this ridiculously complicated and wonderful and heartbreaking but rewarding world of immigration law. So that's kind of the Cliff Notes version of how I got to the lawyer side of things.
Okay. Wow. That's a lot. I feel like we could just like unpack that the rest of the time, but I know that we want to talk about maybe how that went for a while, and then how you came to realize that maybe there was something different that you wanted.
Yeah, so I remember sitting in law school and professors would say things like, you should look into all the things you can do with a law degree that don't require practicing law. And I would sit there and think, that's ridiculous. Like, why would anybody go to law school and not practice law? Like, to me, there was no other options available. I went to law school and I was gonna be in a courtroom all the time. And I had this idea that I was gonna be this high profile criminal defense attorney. And I did that for a little bit. I did a bunch of daily court appearances and my jury trials and all of that stuff. And it just wore down on me a little bit more every day. And I didn't realize how much I was out of sync with what I was supposed to be doing. Because to me, and I will always remember constantly feeling like I needed to define success, but never understanding that. So what I mean by that, because that sentence really didn't make sense, is I had a law degree. I was living on my own. I didn't require anybody else's financial support anymore, because that was not always my life. People would look at me and see this attorney who's practicing, who's in court. I mean, I had a trial that was on TV, and I'm doing all of this stuff, but I feel so unsuccessful. And there became a point in time where I had a crash, leading to a 4-day panic attack and leading to my first ever therapy sessions. And this is, so my dad died in 2001. I went to my first therapy session in 2015 or 16. So 15 years of not talking to anybody, not letting any emotion out, feeling like I had to be this overly achieved academic person. And I remember sitting in her office talking about how unsuccessful I felt. And that's the first time anybody had ever asked me, well, what does success mean to you? And I couldn't answer that question. I had never thought of it as something that you define. I had just thought of it as something that you chase, and eventually you get there and you just know that you're there. And so I had to spend some time thinking about what success really meant to me. And honestly, that's a 4-year journey of figuring out what I wanted to be doing. And it led to me thinking about leaving the practice of law. I opened my own law firm because I was having a conversation with somebody about how I was going to quit practicing law, and I had no idea what I was going to do. And I was just going back to square one, and they advised that maybe I would be happier if I opened my own law firm, at least give that a shot to see whether having that control over what type of cases I take, what type of clients I deal with, that might give me some more freedom. And it did, and it didn't, if that makes sense. So I got the freedom that I was looking for as far as being able to back off and not have the pressure of somebody else telling me where to be and when to be there, but I still didn't feel successful. And so throughout the next couple of years, I started learning about myself. I became really, I delved into neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP as some people know it. I became a master practitioner in that, and I really started to understand the way our minds work, our limiting beliefs, the way we talk to each other, the way that the things that are said to us as a child impact what we think is important as an adult, and we don't even realize it's happening. And through that process, it became extremely important for me to share my story. So I started a podcast called More Than Corporate, which led to the desire to enter into the coaching business and really work with people who are struggling with feeling stuck or feeling like they have climbed the wrong mountain and they don't know how to get out of that. Like, it's hard to walk away from a graduate degree and all the work that you put into that to figure out what you really want to do. And so now what I've learned is that my happiness and my success and what fulfills me is a combination of both. It's figuring out how much I want to put into my law practice, how much I want to put into these other things that I'm doing, and understanding that there are no rules. And that's the hardest thing for me to say, and I remind myself of that daily, that there are no rules, that nobody says that what I'm doing now is what I have to do forever. And so that's kind of where I'm at now, is just kind of day by day deciding what fulfills me and what my idea of living my best life is, and being able to define that without bringing in the definitions and expectations of other people.
So how did you come to terms with realizing that maybe your idea of success was defined by other people, and then understanding that you had your own definition and it was okay?
Some days I wonder if I have come to terms with that. I think that's a daily reminder. It was painful. A lot of tears. There was a post that was made by somebody, and I'm so sorry, I can't remember who it is, but he talked about the pain of personal development and how frustrated he was in seeing this glossy side of personal development being this post and meditation and things like that, and personal development really being willing to have those really difficult conversations with yourself. And it wasn't until was able to step back and have those serious conversations about why what I was doing was important to me and what my purpose was and what I really wanted to be accomplishing, because there's a ton of fear behind it. There's a ton of limiting beliefs behind what we're doing. And even though it may seem like I had accomplished a ton by being an Ernie, that was the safe route for me. That was the academic route. That was the route that I always thought I'd take. This, opening up my feelings and podcasting and putting content out and helping other people live their best life, that's terrifying. And so it looked like, as an attorney, that I was living this best, amazing life, but that was not my best life. And I had to come to terms with that through a lot of internal struggle.
So you said you kind of alluded to the fact that maybe you're still in the struggle today. So are there things that you consistently remind yourself of or ask of yourself or think about to keep you on track and like not fear-based?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we all have some sort of fear-based rhetoric in our life all the time. And we push through it and then something else pops up. Like limiting beliefs and fear is not this wall that you break,
right,
and then you get to run away from. It's like the wall that you break and it follows you for the rest of your life. And you have to constantly be aware of it. And so I find it super important to surround myself with people who understand the journey that I'm on and are willing to push me out of any fear-based stuff. And so I actually have an accountability call every Sunday morning with a really good friend of mine who we set down our goals for the week. We talk about our wins and our losses, and we're both willing to say to each other, like, you said you were going to do this last week and you didn't do it. Why has it not been done? Because I'll tell you, 9 times out of 10, the reason you're procrastinating, the reason that you're not accomplishing the things that you say you're going to accomplish is because you're afraid of getting them done. And one of the hardest things for me to understand, because I'm so analytical, is a fear of success. And a fear of success will keep you from doing the things that you truly believe will make you successful. And it will keep you in the safe spot where you're constantly wondering whether you're living your best life, but you're making it day by day and you're doing things and, you know, you don't have a bad life. You just feel like something's missing. Mm-hmm. And that fear is what keeps you from finding out what that is.
I love that. That's a great point. I'm reading a book. I may not remember her name. Gabby Bernstein has a book out called The Universe Has Your Back. And actually, I just went through a 21-day challenge with her, and she talks about how she realized that her not living big, she calls it something else, but her not living big was due to her own resistance that included fear, and feeling like you were okay if you were in that fear. Like, you're almost programmed to not be okay. And then to be okay with not being okay, if that makes any sense. Like, if I'm not in turmoil or I'm not wishing for more, then that's where I should be, because that's how we're wired to just like be this fear-based person, when really it's letting go of that resistance and just seeing it for what it is that helps us be able to move past it. Like you said, it never goes away. I have a friend that says there's a devil at every level.
Yeah, 100%. And I'll never forget, like, so much of it too comes down to identity, like who we think we are. And that's one of the hardest things to change, because for so long, my identity was tied to an attorney. Mm-hmm. The idea of doing anything other than practicing law, I couldn't get there. I would panic thinking about that, because who am I without my law degree? Mm-hmm. We wrap ourselves around our careers so much. And to the point of your struggles, we wrap ourselves around our struggles. And so I'll never forget sitting in my therapist's office talking to her about the fact that I still felt like I was in all these emotions and I didn't know how to move past the negative things that had happened to me. Like, I had dealt with them, but I still felt like I was sitting in them. And she said, you know, one of the hardest things to figure out is who you are without your struggles. We're so afraid to leave our struggles behind because they define us. Those things are the things that we've had to push through to become who we are. And it was me trying to figure out the purpose behind each struggle that I've been through and what I was supposed to learn from that, and focusing on the lessons instead of the hurt and the struggle that I went through before I could separate my identity from that. And then my identity became tied to the lessons instead of the physical struggle itself, or the mental or emotional struggle. And that helped me out a ton.
That's huge. What a great, it's the same thing I said, it's just a different way of putting it. And that to me makes a lot more sense, and it's something that I can look at as tangible. Like, hey, I need to focus on the learns, not the pain, and figure out what I am without wallowing in the pain or staying in the pain.
Yeah, and one of the biggest things that we learn in NLP training is that those stories have emotions tied to them. And so when you constantly recount those stories, but you haven't dealt with the emotions behind them, they become powerful over you. So there's a couple of different ways when you're talking about stories. There's the person who has dealt with those emotions. There's mm-hmm. the person who is using that story from that event for the purpose of teaching a lesson to others or to themselves. And that's different than the person who's telling the story and sitting in the emotions, because the only thing you're doing at that point is giving that story power. And so for that reason, whenever I was working with my coach in the beginning, who was also my NLP trainer, and I would go into story mode, she would pull me out of it. And she would say, the story doesn't matter. I want to know the feelings. I want to know the lessons. I want to know what you're struggling with, but I don't want to know the story. The story doesn't matter. And so until you get past the emotion and past the pain, the story actually hurts more than it helps.
Wow. Yeah, that's a big deal. That reminds me, I have a mentor, and he's notorious when there's like group calls and people can call in and talk about where they're at and struggle, and he would give ideas or advice or wisdom or coaching, all of the above. When people would go into story mode, he like cuts them off, and it's just like, no, just give me the bottom line. Like, I don't need to know all the things. I just need to know the bottom line. And part of that is him being a high, deep personality. He's a driver. But the other part is exactly what you're saying. It's getting to the core of it. And it doesn't matter what the story is. It's the pain, right? It's the emotion behind it. That's what the problem is. It's not all the other people in the story or even the circumstances. It's how you interpreted it.
Yeah, and I mean, the problem is never the problem. That's one of my favorite things that I ever learned, is that the problem is never the problem. Mm-hmm. And so what happens when you go into story mode is you give away your control and your power to the other things in the story. So, you know, not to go too deep into it, but for example, I was in a relationship where I was cheated on. And for a long time, that killed me. And when I would go into story mode, it was like that jerk and that bleep, you know?
Right.
Rather than dealing with the fact that I was feeling like I had a lack of self-worth, I was feeling like I wasn't good enough, I was feeling like there was some things that I could have changed in the relationship that may have changed the outcome, I never got to that point because I was too stuck on all these things he did to me and, you know, all the circumstances around it. And so when you focus on that surface level problem, you don't actually get to the problem, and you don't ever deal with it and make the realizations that this is why you're hurting. I wasn't hurting because of his actions. I was hurting because I felt completely worthless. And maybe his actions contributed to that, but until I deal with that underlying problem, that story is just gonna piss me off even more and hurt even more, and I'm gonna sit in that. And it honestly took me probably 6 years to get past that because I was stuck in story mode. But you don't know you're in it. So people who are in it, and this is probably one of the most important things that I can say, is that it is almost impossible for you to realize that you are stuck in that story mode circle. It almost always takes somebody to pull you out of it. And this is why surrounding yourself with people is so important. This is why coaches are so important. This is why it's so important to get other people involved who are able to pull you out of that. Not your friends and family, because your friends and family just want to jump on the blame trains most of the time. They're upset that their friend is hurt. You need somebody that can have those hard conversations with you and pull you out of that story mode. Otherwise, you can sit in it for years.
Right. some people sit in it their whole lives. It's like a giant blind spot. You don't even realize what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hmm. When you started to uncover this in your situation, were there key questions or exercises that that your coach or therapist had you do that helped you move past it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of resources through NLP training that other people, it's hard to do on yourself because it's hard to do on yourself because you're stuck in it and it's really hard to see. But one of the biggest things for me was complete 100% responsibility for my life and my actions. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I would go into, and that's something that you can do on your own, but again, sometimes it takes some time. Mm-hmm. Whenever I would get in complaining mode or anything to that effect, it would be, what am I doing that is causing this? And when we talk about NLP, it's about the difference between being at cause and being at effect. So somebody who's at effect is constantly blaming something else. I'm late because traffic was awful, because the guy in front of me didn't know how to drive fast enough, because my kids couldn't get ready on time. Somebody who's at cause, they're late because they didn't allot enough time to consider that their kids might not be as cooperative as you would like in the morning, that, you know, everybody doesn't understand your schedule and that you have somewhere to be and there might be an accident and all of these things, like those external things, you give away so much power for your success, for your day, for your happiness, when you allow other people to be responsible for your success, failure, or happiness. So the moment that you take 100% responsibility for everything in your life, the moment you become in control of what your life looks like. And it sucks because it's so much better to blame somebody else than yourself. It's awful.
Oh yeah,
but absolutely. There's always something you can do. And so one of my favorite books is The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson. And he talks about this in responsibility and fault. And he says, you know, what happens to you might not be your fault. Losing my dad wasn't my fault. But it's my responsibility to figure out how I'm gonna deal with that. And it's my responsibility to pick up the pieces and live my life. And if I don't, then that's my responsibility too. It's not the circumstances' fault that I never moved on. It's my responsibility to figure out what my life looks like. And that's so powerful to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Yeah, it's like a double-sided, I don't know, double-edged sword, double-sided coin, whatever, but it's painful to go through that process of taking responsibility, but it's also powerful at the same time. Yeah.
And then I will say that the other thing that helps a ton is understanding the way that your mind works. So just the like crash course is we all have a conscious mind and an unconscious mind. And our unconscious mind stores everything. Our unconscious mind, everything that we've ever been, everything that's ever been said to us, everything that we've felt, and it's responsible for our decision-making, and it's responsible for our impulses and the way that we react to things and our emotions. And then you have your conscious mind, and that's responsible for your actual thinking. Mm-hmm. And what happens is your unconscious mind runs about 90% of your life and your conscious mind runs 10% of your life, but thinks it runs everything. And so once you understand that there's this deeper level, and in that deeper level are all of your limiting beliefs, things that anybody's ever said to you that makes you think that something's okay or not okay, your morals. Once you understand how that's formed, and then understand the way that your conscious mind and your unconscious mind interact, you can start asking yourself what the real problem is. And like the best example I can give is if somebody's ever asked you a question and you have that thought that enters your head, and then you start thinking about how stupid that thought is. And so you're like, well, I don't know. I don't know the answer. You absolutely know the answer. You just don't want to say it because your conscious mind has talked you out of that first thought, which was your unconscious mind saying, I know exactly what the problem is. So when you're hurting or you're trying to get through something, asking yourself like what the real problem is, or getting around somebody who can ask you what the real problem is, is so important, because our conscious mind will lie to us all day long. And if we don't tap in to that deeper layer, we never really understand what the problem is, because our conscious mind does everything that it can to protect us from the pain and the limiting beliefs that our unconscious mind has. And I will tell you that once you open that up and once you start listening, your unconscious mind feels free. It's like a kid that just got let out of like daycare. And it's like, oh, now you're listening to me, and your mind goes racing, and all of a sudden, all this stuff just happens, because your mind's like, thank God I've been wanting you to listen to me for the last 37 years. So thanks for finally listening to what I have to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I did an interview with another podcast guest earlier today, and he talked about the exact same thing, about how much our subconscious mind just puts us on autopilot, and how there's so much freedom, right? When you can understand and decipher, you know, something that I will ask myself on a regular basis is, isn't that interesting? Like, I'm feeling this way. Why is that? Isn't that interesting? Like, take a step back from it, look at it differently, because I want to blame, especially if it's a difficult person that I'm dealing with, and it's like hitting me on a pain point, like I'm not good enough, right? So then I want to blame it on them, but the truth is, this is me not feeling good enough, and yeah, maybe their behavior isn't okay, but really the problem is me, like, you know, and what my expectations or what my disappointment is or what my own struggle is. And there's power in that after you work through the pain of being real with yourself, right? To be able to overcome it. But it's not easy. Like, I understand why people don't step out to change, because this is hard work. Like you said earlier, the pain of personal development. But boy, once you get a taste of it though, and you experience the freedom in it, like, I don't ever want to go back, no matter how hard it is. I don't want to go back.
No, I agree 100%. And I think we talked about this when we chatted before, but one of my favorite quotes, and it is actually still my screensaver on my phone, is from You Are a Badass by Jen Sincero. Mm-hmm. And she says, the walls of your comfort zone are lovingly decorated with a lifetime of your favorite excuses. And our brain works in pictures. So we have to be able to see a picture for everything. And people talk about these abstract things like comfort zones and freedom and success. And it's really hard for us sometimes to define them because we don't have a picture for what they look like. And what that did for me, and I had been working on getting out of my comfort zone a ton, like physically through Tough Mudders and through opening my law firm and doing a ton of stuff, but I still didn't know what my comfort zone looked like. And when I heard that quote for the first time, it was the first time that this picture of a comfort zone entered my mind. And it was like this little shack, this little like cottage. And inside of it was like an okay life. And all written on the walls in like decorative stuff was every bad thing I've ever said to myself, every reason I've ever said that I can't accomplish or I can't do or whatever. And outside was like this beautiful, gorgeous place to be. And all I had to do was open the door and walk out, and I couldn't do it. And like, so for me, that stays as my screensaver, so that every time I look at my phone, I can be reminded that there was a point in my life where I played small, and I refuse to go back there no matter how difficult it is.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah, I remember us talking about that, because I had a similar experience with a different author. Jenny Allen has a book out that's called Restless, and in that book she talks about how we've decorated our prison walls so so well, but we don't even realize we're in prison. And I mean, it's the same concept, but and that was the first time I'd ever heard anything like that, and it totally hit home for me. And when I would do studies with women on that book, people would they'd have breakdowns at that point, because it was like a forehead smack, like, wow, this is where I am. This is where I am. I've decorated my walls so well with all the stuff and the things and the hurts and whatever that I don't even realize how small I'm living, you know, how small I'm playing.
When I finally kind of gained my consciousness back, I guess, for lack of a better word, like started to really understand what was going on in my mind and really deal with the things I needed to deal with. It was, I used to tell people, because here I was practicing law, graduated from law school, moved everything, or graduated from high school, college, moved everything over to Michigan, basically alone for law school, moved everything back to Vegas alone for law school, and doing all of these things that exuded strength and felt so weak at the same time. And once I started to tap into that, I used to tell people that it is amazing how many accomplishments you can rack up without truly living your life, how much you can get done without ever feeling passionate about what you're doing, and how you can confuse yourself to make yourself think that you're passionate about what you're doing when you're really not.
Right. Absolutely. Especially if you are convinced that when you reach a certain whatever, that then you've arrived. And I mean, no wonder we have so many problems with addictions and pain killing and you know, I mean, addictions of every kind and everything. And it, I mean, we see it huge here in the U.S. No wonder, because if we're just so busy pretending and we don't even know we're pretending, we have to, that has to come out somewhere, that we have to cope with that pain somehow.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. Good stuff. So today, at this point, you have, I want to say balance, but I don't even like that word because it's not a balance. It never is. Maybe it's harmony. Maybe you have some harmony,
I like
or some
harmony,
or some flow or whatever between like what you're doing and how you're serving as an attorney, and then also what you're doing. I think I called it beyond corporate, sorry about that. What
no,
you're doing,
okay,
in your More Than Corporate podcast, and then also you have a Facebook group, right? Can you
I do.
Will you share like what that looks like and how you're helping people?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you so much for talking about how balance is not what we're looking for. I hate the term work-life balance.
Yeah.
And so for anybody out there who's trying to figure it out, which is, I guess, everybody who has a heartbeat, I love the life wheel so much personally. Mm-hmm. So if you're not familiar with the life wheel, I would highly encourage you to go check that out, because as we've already said in this, the problem's not the problem. And so when you are looking at why you don't feel completely fulfilled, you may want to blame it on something that is not really the cause, because it's easier. You might want to blame it on your relationship or your job or whatever, because it's easier. So the life wheel looks like a trivial pursuit piece and has whatever is important to you in each one of those pieces, work, relationship, spirituality, whatever you want. And you rate yourself from 0 to 10 on that life wheel and create your life in a circle. And the idea being that when you have a well-rounded life, you should be able to have this circle that you could roll a car on, right? If you had four of them and they were your will. What they normally look like is this jagged ups and downs and ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. And so if you take a look at what your low points are, you can start to set goals and things to improve that area of your life and eventually kind of get this harmony. I love that word that you used. So for me, that's where it started, is by doing a life wheel. And I personally do a life wheel every 90 days, every
that's
quarter.
That's a great idea.
I do another life wheel. And that's where I set my quarterly goals. And then my action steps to come back is what do I want to work on in my life will. And that really let, what you learn from doing that is that your work is not different than your personal life, and your family is not different than your work, right? All of these things play a part in who you are, and it really helps with your identity crisis that you might have when you try to move from one section of this wheel to the other. Like, you know, you try to leave work to spend time with your family and you have panic attacks, or you try to leave your family to go back into the workforce and you feel like you're an awful mother. You know, you start to learn that all of these are a piece of who you are. This will represent your entire identity, and each one of these are part of your identity. And it really helped me with some of that identity crisis from balancing out my life. So I created the More Than Corporate podcast, and I created it in August, and I thought that I created it because I wanted to talk about success and fulfillment and comfort zones and all this stuff. I have now learned 4 months later that I created it because I still didn't know what success was to me. I still didn't have that definition, and that's what I needed to talk about. We teach what we need. So when you're out there talking to somebody and that's what's passionate to you, it's because somewhere deep down inside you need to hear that, and you need to be able to have those conversations. And so over the last 4 months, I've really been able to put some pieces of what success means to me. And I've learned that it's this ever-changing definition, that every day you could have this different idea of what success means to you, and giving yourself the freedom to honor that is where true success and true fulfillment comes from. So the podcast, the community page, I just use that in an attempt to talk about what I've been through, the lessons I've learned from that, in hopes that somebody needs to hear it and that it will connect with somebody and make a positive impact in their life.
Mm-hmm. And it is connecting with people. Oh my goodness. I mean, just on your page on Facebook alone, or in your group, I guess, you can watch it. You can watch how people are processing the things that you put out there, because here's the deal. It's not fluff. It's like real stuff that makes you think and really pushes you beyond the level that you're at to be better. And I love that. I love that. And I love how you mentioned the life wheel. That's not something that I've talked about on any of the podcast episodes. That's a fantastic resource. It's something that I use with my coaching clients on a consistent basis. And it really gives you a great picture right in front of you, you know, where you're at. And because we think in pictures, it's really, really helpful to understand why maybe you don't feel like you're in harmony. So good stuff. I will put links to how people can find you in the description of the podcast. And More Than Corporate is the name of your podcast, and it's the name of your group, right?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll put links to that in the description in case you're driving and you can't get to it right now. Highly recommend that you seek out Amber and definitely subscribe to her podcast. It's amazing. She has great stuff. And again, it's not fluff. It's life-changing things here. So I always like to wrap up with some teaching points. I have to confess, it's really hard to narrow them down, and I don't even know that they flow well because we talked about all different kinds of things, but I have three. So number one, figure out who you are without your struggle, focusing on the learns instead of the pain. Number two, understand that the problem is never the problem. Get out of story mode and uncover what the real problem is. Oftentimes you need help with that because a lot of times you don't understand how you can see it differently because you're so connected to it. So get some help, find those people that can help you. And number three, take 100% responsibility for your life. Wow, mic drop. That's a big one. all good things. But if truly, if you're here and you're listening, I have to believe that it's because either you are stretching yourself to live big, or you're starting to believe that there's a way that you can live big. This isn't a mysterious thing that only happens to lucky people. It happens to people that choose it. And I believe in you, and I believe in your ability to live big. So Amber, thank you so much for being on today. Any last thoughts before we wrap up?
So here's what, I will say one more thing. Okay. So I just recently did a podcast episode where I talked about the difference between feeling like you have accomplished something and feeling like you're successful. And for me, this was a big thing, because we feel so good when we do something and we confuse that for success. And if you go listen to that episode, I talk about the difference between them and the definitions of accomplishment and the definitions of success. But what it really comes down to is your underlying purpose. And this has been really big for me. So I want to give a resource, and that is Simon Sinek's TED Talk on Why. And this TED Talk is it's designed for businesses, but it talks about human behavior. And one of the things that he says in there is that everybody knows what they do, 100% of people. Some people know how they do it, but very few people know why they do it. And when he talks about why, he talks about the reason that companies exist, the reason that you get out of bed in the morning, and the reason that anybody should care. And so for me, I've been using that guidepost when I pursue accomplishments. Am I doing this because I really wanted to do it? Why do I want to do it? Why should I care that I'm chasing this mountain or climbing this mountain? What's the reason for that? And so if we really get down to the purpose of what we're doing, not the surface why I'm doing this to make money, not that, but the underlying purpose of why anybody should care what you're doing and why you care what you're doing, then you can avoid feeling accomplished and not feeling successful. So I'll just leave you with that.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I'll put the link to that TED Talk in the podcast too. He also has a book out called Start With Why. Yes. That you can, yes, written for businesses, but you can apply it to yourself personally too. I'm looking at it right now on my shelf here. So thank you for that, Amber. And thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
I am so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So thank you to all the listeners for being here, for spending time with Dialed In today. I know you have a lot of options on how you can spend your time, and being here with us means a lot. And love to know what value you got from this and what's going on. Drop us a line, send a voice message, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And until next time, take action, live big, and stay dialed in. Thank you.